Go ahead and call our staff council meeting to order. Thank you and everybody for being here. We'll have roll call attendance.
Hey, Nate?
Here.
Evelyn? Chad?
Here.
Jerry?
Here.
Oldest? Leslie? Jesse?
Here.
Sue?
Here.
Lindy, and I have online. Chris, and I've got Chris online as well. Jane?
Here.
Matthew?
Here.
Susie? Stacy? Randy?
Here.
Katie? Jessica Armstrong? Emily Nelson?
Here.
Kara?
Here.
Jean?
Here.
Jessica, and then, is there a party for Jessica? Jessica Allard?
Here.
Kim?
Here.
Brad?
Here.
Lena?
Here.
Janelle?
Yes.
Phil?
Here.
Christina?
Here.
Amanda?
I'm trying to send an announcement on the internet.
Okay, thanks. Melissa?
Here.
Trish?
Here.
Connie? Samira?
Here.
Jamie? And I had Jamie online. Form is now.
Great. A little bit of a soundtrack. It's nice. Everyone. Alright, great. Thanks, Nicole. Next is the approval of today's agenda. I assume you'll have it in front of you, the printer on the screen. I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Any questions? Edits? Okay, hearing none. We have an agenda for this morning. We also have a consent agenda, including the minutes from last month, as well as two resolutions of appreciation. They're included as attachments to the agenda for this morning, in appreciation of Interim Chancellor Mike Powers and our president from last year, Bay Long. So, I would entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Thanks. Any discussion on that? Questions? All right, hearing none. We have consent agenda. We have an item for Green Dot Minutes. I would entertain any suggestions or comments regarding Green Dot. I know that there have been some people since our last meeting that have attended Green Dot training as part of Staff Development Day. There have been some other events around Green Dot since our May meeting. If we have any other suggestions, I guess I would just say that during the summertime, we have a lot of the people on campus, I think, are just sort of different. There are a lot of people that aren't here because they're on contract or because they're on travel. There are other people that are here for different classes, community members. And so one thing that I would think is just important is to make sure that we're all familiar with where the emergency phones are. I think that there's a listing of where those emergency phones are on the police on the UAF police website. Just in case, you know, I think that that's obviously something that Chief Mallard has stressed. You know, if you see something unexpected or out of the ordinary, just to know where those resources are to make sure you can get in contact with somebody that can help. Okay. So then there's a map, I think, and then also just like a list of where those phones are, and I think that those can be important resources when something unexpected is happening. Anything else that you want to be aware of, make other people aware of, safety-wise, green dot-wise? Okay. All right. We'll move into pending actions. We have a few items on here that I think have not had a lot of movement. I think both the staff council resolution, which has been submitted, the view of layoff or recall decision. I don't think that there's been any development or movement on that since last meeting. And I think the emergency action plan policy review is also sort of still in a stasis.
At the last meeting, we discussed whether or not if we could get feedback and then possibly pass an action.
Okay. Is that we have made that emergency action plan available to folks. I think that we could bring a resolution in terms of supporting that policy, which I think is new. Is that correct? It's not a revision. It's actually a new policy. So maybe I'll just get some feedback here. Have people had time to review that plan? Are we at a stage where we could actually pass a resolution in support of that, or you know, we could draft that and get it over email, or are people looking for more time to review that policy?
The policy is not attached to this agenda.
It's not here. Yeah, I think it was on the last agenda.
There's a question on that.
Chris, this is the UAF emergency action plan. So, I'm not hearing a lot. So, maybe we're not ready to maybe we'll push that to the end of the summer.
I wasn't given a date. In terms of getting feedback, so I can ask for additional time.
Okay, all right. That might be helpful. And we'll put some sort of increased focus on that and make sure people get it out of email and have some have a deadline or something. Thanks. Okay. There are a few attachments. Attachment 9 and 10 are both messages from President Johnson. That arrived toward the end of May. So these are both regarding. So there's a bunch of in that first attachment, that email. Well, I'll say this: there are competing fundamental understandings of the function of language. The first one sort of says that language is inherent to our experience as humans, that it provides the only bridge between like our personal individual realities, and that it's built into the common reality, like any common reality that we have is based in language, and that's the only way that we can understand each other and have any access to shared perspectives. And so, in that sense, language is very good and communication is great. The other one, the other sort of competing understanding is that language is unnatural, and every communication that uses it while it might be necessary provides another opportunity for misunderstanding. Okay. I'm prone to understand the world according to the first view of language. There have been a number of recent examples of communication here that have started to challenge my understanding. In the first email here from Kevin Johnson, there's a whole lot of stuff, and I think it's presented as if it's not as important or relevant as it is. It includes, toward the end, a decision from his office that, in addition to recent changes that were in process of being discussed and reviewed by Staff Alliance, statewide, university statewide offices, governance groups in general, to reinstitute, you know, there were recent changes made to this furlough policy without seeking feedback from governance, including the removal of notification to staff governance about the use, the general use of furlough, okay? We were in Staff Alliance was in the process of negotiating some sort of notification back into the policy. As those discussions were going on, we received this email from President Johnson with some new revisions, including not only is there no notification to staff governance, but they cut the notification period to staff members in half. From 60 days to 30 days. Okay. This was passed as an emergency change, which means that there was no notification or feedback period from governance. I think that's sort of all just to say that this is effectively policy at this point.
Do we know if it was presented to the board at the last meeting? Did it, an emergency regulation is required to be minimally presented?
Yeah, I wasn't online for the Board of Regents meeting, but if anybody else was present and witnessed any of the president's presentations to the board, it might be helpful to know that. I guess I would assume that it was.
It wasn't on the agenda.
Okay.
I don't think it's effective until that's part of the emergency regulation.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that in full, sorry. Any questions or concerns with regard to that in the discussion?
I have a question.
Yeah, Brandy.
The 60 to 30 days, is that enough? Is that the end enough?
I believe so.
So, you know, we're being dense or not on that half.
No, we're getting furlough and layoff and stuff here. So,
yeah.
It was the same notice requirement for both furlough and exempt and non-exempt for furlough, but it's 60 days versus 4 weeks for, or 90 days versus 4 weeks for layoff or exempt versus non-exempt.
And that didn't change, right?
No.
So, to be sure I'm understanding, there is now no requirement to consult with governance about furlough.
Correct.
Seems like at the very least we should push for reinstating that.
So,
I understand the time frame that it's very hard to get governance feedback in 30 days. But we do have a governance process.
Agree, definitely. And, you know, this was something that was very important. It came without, the changes to the furlough policy, you know, a month ago, came to Alliance without any notice and also arrived as if this was policy that they were merely seeking approval for and not feedback. Alliance pushed back a little bit with the same, I think, concerns that you have about, you know, in many cases, and this isn't this is not a case of, you know, staff alliance or any governance group wanting to have anything to do with the use of individual furloughs or even like at department levels. But I think that our understanding has long been that if the use of furlough is approved by the president, it will be approved on a large scale and then used at the discretion of different departments. In our discussions with the president's office, it seems less and less clear that that he and the statewide would be reticent to use to employ furloughs at a smaller, more granular scale. And so, if that's the case, it seems like at the very least, governance should be notified that those furloughs have been approved and are going to be used.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think a couple of comments. It's being used like this is an emergency change, but we've known about budget crisis for years now. So it just kind of seems weird that being used when it's not at the time to have interact with the governance groups.
Agree.
So it just seems like and the budget crisis isn't as bad as everybody.
Agree, for sure. Chris. With regard to your first question, Chris, it was before the most recent changes, actually before the first round of changes that the president's proposed to the federal policy, there was a requirement for governance to be notified when the president approved the use of furloughs, and they effectively removed that requirement at this point. And so the way that the policy stands now, there's a 30-day notification period for any employees that will be affected by potential furloughs. Governance is not interested in reviewing each individual staff member that will potentially be furloughed. But the assumption was that this is a decision that's made on a very large scale and just very generally whether or not furloughs have been approved for anyone. To me, it's clear that there's a potential good in terms of our governance groups being aware that those furlough policies have been approved. And then to your second point, it actually sort of feels similar to last year's HR decisions regarding emergency clauses. And I think that we have similar anxieties about those changes when they happen. I think the point that there should be, and I think there will be, we will express those concerns, anxieties back to the president's office. But like I said, I'm not sure how open they are at this point to hearing that. So, any other concerns or discussion on furlough? I think that, to Matt's point, it's true that we have appropriately assumed that furloughs will be employed. I think it's still safe to assume that, even though there's been some, at least partially good news in terms of the budget. I don't think that means that furloughs are off the table by any means.
No, that's not right.
We were told sort of an interesting wrinkle. They're asking for voluntary reduction, but if people don't volunteer, then they'll go for mandatory furlough. And it's not clear if that means that they need 90% participation, or if there's some small numbers we get through, or if they don't actually need full participation.
That would be helpful to know.
Unfortunately, I don't know where to call the stop and say, wait a minute, if it's voluntary, but it's going to be mandatory, then it's just mandatory.
Right.
One interesting
thing I have the government should follow up on in the next year or so is how much furlough has there been versus how many volunteer or how much voluntary leave without pay has there been or contract reductions. Because I'm sure we're not the only, you know, the only department unit saying, well, we're going to avoid furloughs, but we really need as many people to take, you know, contract reductions as possible. Which I think in the context of, hey, if you don't take contract reductions, we're going to have to do furlough, that's not quite the same thing as voluntary, you know, hey, we'll work with you if you want a shorter contract to spend time with family, or if you want to take leave without pay because you want to go on a long vacation. But for this change specifically, I think it would be appropriate for governance, our body, specifically the Central Maine Staff Alliance, opposing these changes. I think it's interesting that these changes are, they invent their own term. I don't think budget impasse is anywhere else in the regulations. They just kind of invented a concept and said, oh, here's, and then it only applies to budget impasse. So it's still a 60-day notification period for other kinds of furlough, but it's 30 days if there's a budget. I mean, what does that mean? And then I think it's also worth, you know, with worth writing a resolution to say that we're paying attention, and if you're just going to say, well, we're going to bypass governance, well, at the very least, we're going to tell you we don't appreciate that.
It's a good point.
And it's not the first time this happened. Chris is right, the playoffs, but also in the 90s, when the geodiff was removed from Fairbanks, it was the same thing. Fairbanks, or the president said, no more geodiff from Fairbanks, and governance said, hey, we don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what's happened before, it'll happen again. That's how the regulations work. But that doesn't mean we still shouldn't protest.
Agree. Yeah, Trish.
And so maybe following on with what Brad's saying, if we do write a resolution or something formal, I'd like it to clear Matthew's point that it would not surprise me if there's really an emergency resolution really appropriate when we've been talking about it all time.
And what happens if the governor, I think the smart money is that this won't happen, but what happens if the governor does decide to say, no, I'm not going to approve a budget unless you have my funding? Well, are we going to have another emergency regulation that, you know, says, okay, we'll furlough at 0 days notice?
Yeah,
right. What's the point of regulation if you're just going to change it whenever you need to?
All good points. I think that it sounds like a resolution is probably in order. Jane, did you have something?
The only way I do when we were talking about data and getting some data about you know, how the different departments are doing their official furloughs, how, you know, I'm just curious to know how we get that data, because I feel like different departments are handling it different ways, and some people do voluntary reductions due to, you know, to try to avoid a furlough, but others are trying to do voluntary reductions because they just want to, and I'm not sure that we collect that data that way. I'm not sure that our timekeeping are accurate enough to really see what to see the why, but we haven't moved past that.
Well, I think, you know, it's a good point, and I think that in general, the idea that governors should be alerted, or at least, you know, notified in some way when the furloughs have been approved, I think is in that spirit. I think to track any of it, or to even have a grasp on the way the furloughs, if and when furloughs are being used, there's really, at this point, because of the changes in the regulations, there's really no method whatsoever for us to even know. Aside from just sort of being anecdotally, you know, people speaking up and saying, my department was notified.
And you can't really look at things without pay, because there's lots of reasons why things without pay. You can't really look at there's no way to really see that data.
Yeah. Well, again, like I said before, I think a more cynical person would observe that might not be accidental.
It's not. Yeah. It's not. That's from chairing a compensation group, whenever you ask for data, no, it doesn't exist. No. Well, we don't have that. Or our evidence, our data doesn't show that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
it's very clear that, yeah.
And yet they're making decisions based on something.
Yeah. But sometimes it's just how you phrase the question. If you're not perfectly exact in what you're looking for, they'll just say, oh, yeah, we don't have that. You know, if you know what you're looking for, I think you have a better chance of getting it and know how to get it.
So these are all different points. I think that there's there's a general energy that's pointing in the same direction, and I think it's probably pointing toward at least the drafting and consideration of a resolution. We have a pretty full agenda today, so I'm not sure if we have time to draft and consider it during today's meeting, but, with keeping in mind that we won't have another meeting until August. We could approach this on a shorter term if people are willing to read and vote on something like that over email. And I guess I would also hope that folks could help in the drafting of the resolution of maybe over email, so I can come up with the kind of a skeletal one with some of our thoughts from this meeting, this discussion in mind. But I hope that people can provide some feedback and some revisions and stuff. So we'll put that on my task list. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
I would point out that we are the representatives of the staff, and as such, I think we should have a role not only in being notified, but in notifying the staff that we represent and helping to explain these changes, because I think there's a very general level of confusion even amongst us about what the overall, there's been so many, as you say, communications from President Johnson and all these other things that I don't think even, I don't understand the full impact of everything, and I'm sure that a lot of staff don't. So it could be argued that it's to the President's benefit to have us be well informed about things so that we can then help inform the staff that we represent.
Excellent point. Okay. So, keep an eye on the email for that. Maybe any other commentary or, as you're thinking about it, if things come up, feel free to email me and say also, Nicole. That would be helpful. Regarding sick leave and types of employment, those are, I think that at the Alliance, at the statewide level, those have both been through the feedback process at Alliance. I believe that there has been some back and forth between statewide and governance regarding those revisions. I think that we're at a point where we've reached some shared understanding about, and I think that those have been approved at this point. So, though they're still pending, I think that that only means that they've not been, they've not received final sign off from statewide, but I think that they're back with the President's office. So.
And those are the changes to extended temporary employees? They're not.
And there were some recent developments. Yeah, there were some recent developments about that because the types of employment one, extended temporary, there were some unforeseen, I think, ways that, I think that the motivation behind the revisions that that Alliance had requested had to do with making sure that these extended temporary folks qualified for healthcare benefits. In practice, there was very low engagement in terms of, I think most of the extended temporary had health care from other means, and so nobody was really using it. And I think that it was sort of shifted a bit to reflect that.
I think Chris online said
for Chris, I definitely agree with that. I think that it's at least very unartful to use these new terms, as Brad pointed out. Nobody really knows what an impasse is. To pass this as an emergency change, I think is a little bit of a call to me, because as Matthew and others have noted, these are not conditions that are new or unexpected. I think that they've been anticipated for this year than necessary for months. And, you know, as Chris points out, they're not even new. You know, these are things that we dealt with last summer and the summer before. So, it doesn't really make the rationale behind these changes in the way that they've gone about doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense to me personally. Okay. We have a public comment period. Anybody here or online for public comment? Okay. All right. We have some time for officer reports, but our governance representatives are here. Officers are here, so maybe we'll just jump to them, and then we can get back to officer report after that. So, Colby, thanks for coming. Would you like to address the group?
Sure. You guys are great. Okay.
COM 141 for training for this. Hello, everybody. Thanks for allowing us to hear this talk. First of all, I'd like to take a moment. You probably all know me, but this is James Olcraft, who's our new vice president. We're like them all, so I'm excited to get our year going. First of all, I'd just like to say thank you to all of you for being a supportive staff. We've had another successful school year in very questionable circumstances, so, you know, this school doesn't operate without you. And my education relies upon you. So thank you for the time you guys put into this school, because you're all here for me, and I do appreciate that. We just came back from testifying before the meeting, and some thoughts on the meeting that I had is that students are really looking for communication, more information. That's what we're really lacking in. I heard some comments that kind of rang a bell with me about having a set of circumstances that have seemed really urgent, but we've known about them for a while. So that does raise some questions in my mind about why things are moving the way they are. So that's a challenge I think we're all facing. So we will continue to ask for that information. We'll have students serving on the two digital pathways review of the three academic and four active and non-academic serving reviews. So that's kind of on our schedule coming up in this month. One thing I would like to bring forward to you all, there's been some discussion that's been discussed with students at statewide, and it's been discussed in various little pockets around the university, but I would like to bring it forward to get out in the open, is the idea of a one-credit course, a mandatory course, for students at the first semester at UAS. It could take place, it could replace something like library sciences. And this course would incorporate a lot of the items that have been going on, like human training, online training, like success skills. Those are the common classes at the University of Utah last year. And these students, my impression is that students would find this valuable in addition to, making their campus safer. Keeping student retention. So I would just like to boldly throw that out into the world, starting to talk about that. So we will begin assessing student opinions. We're going to bring forth different governance groups, bringing forth the coalition. So we will take some time to find out what all students are, but me personally, as a student body president, I'm going to start pursuing that. So I would hope to have your support and feedback and input. I guess I'll give James a chance to talk about
it. Thank you for allowing me to be here. I've been told by a lot of my mentors that they tend to figure out what this is, so I'm really excited to be here. One of the things that I would think would be really effective to some of our students within student leadership is having maybe a little bit of mentorship from some of the staff about things that are going on, and learning from you guys about how we can make become better students and become better leaders yourself. If that's something that you guys have any interest in, you can email me or call me or talk to me whenever. I'm in the AFGF office pretty often, but I think that's something that perhaps our student government might have lacked in the past is some mentorship from people that are professionals in that field. So if that's something you guys are talking about or thinking about, that'd be awesome. Another thing that I'm trying to do is build more effective relationships with specific offices. So just to make our student government more effective and get more student voice, it's really hard during the summer to get student opinion because a lot of our students are gone. And like Colby was saying, we pushed out a survey about strategic pathways that is open to staff and faculty and students. And it's still open, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that is coming up, one of the main things is that there simply isn't enough information across the board, like from students, from staff, the staff that have participated in this domain, even the faculty. There's just, they want to know more details. So if you guys are more than welcome to continue to participate in that survey to give us more feedback, because it helps us understand.
The survey, it was really interesting, it was kind of anecdotal, but our student body, if you didn't know, is very disruptive on issues. When we poll, we usually get something like 10 to 90. We got 58 to like 42 or 48 to 52. It was really, really indecisive. So while we're kind of split on what we want as far as, you know, either consolidation or not, we do know that we have concerns and we have questions and we don't have information. So that was something interesting that we found. That's what we came to talk about. If you have any questions, I'll talk to you in your time.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Bobby.
Yeah.
So, IRSA has the first year experience in the class, and it might be worth contacting them and working with them about integrating some of those programs into your idea of the class, because I know that the first year experience class on paper some of these really great programs, but there's a hard, it's optional, it's hard for students to factor those into their schedules in the first semester. So there's a lot of, I think there has been a period of low enrollment in those. Once they do, people will be really there.
Right.
So finding a way to integrate those social experience courses into what you're talking about would be a good idea. Things like creative writing classes and incorporating in the library and learn those skills for study skills and things like that.
And to answer your question, no, we don't have a syllabus. I think we have a fairly solid idea of the elements. And my personal feeling is that, since, you know, we're not experts, and we aren't, you know, we aren't faculty, we aren't faculty students, but we know what we want, and there are certain elements that the subject class should contain, I think. I would want to be involved in that process, but as I'm not an expert, I wouldn't go so far as to create a syllabus. That's the size of it.
And I think once we get more student feedback, ideally this class probably won't happen in 2016. At, you know, or it might start maybe 2018 fall, once we have it fully developed and start building up the need and desire for it. And ideally, it wouldn't just be open to first-year students. It could be open to non-traditional students that maybe for veterans that are coming in and want to learn the area, maybe more acquainted to class. My hope is that it would be kind of open, like have tracks within it, so that specific students can go based upon what they had in mind for.
I think it's pretty essential that it be for anyone at their first semester UAF. Otherwise, we do have such a high opportunity population, so we're just grabbing those. And I think coming freshman at a high school, that's not our entire community. So in order to, you know, help have an opportunity to grow that culture, that change needs to be here. I think really does need to be your first semester UAF. All right.
That's great. Yeah. I have a good question about mentoring programs. So are you signing up
maybe kind of like a formal platform to like for the venture to sign up and like.
Right now, I just want to build interest and see if any of you guys would be interested in mentoring some of our centers that we don't necessarily, Colby and I aren't necessarily in control of the center. So we're trying to give them more incentive to learn and be better leaders. And I don't know about the formal process yet.
Are you looking for mentorship with your own body and this body? Or are you looking for students with
within our student governance community, okay. Like marketing is a great example. Great at marketing,
So at least from my perspective, you guys, I think that that's a great idea. It would be helpful, I think, for our folks to know about those kind of needs or what potential roles you're looking for mentorship in. When it comes to staff, we interact with students in all kinds of different ways. It's not really consistent from department to department. I think that that's true probably even for faculty. So knowing about particular needs that you'd like to be, that you'd like to have relationships that are focused on, might be helpful for us to identify who and how those mentorships would function.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we can really use help with is getting, I don't know how many of you work with graduate students, but there's not a lot of, we don't see a lot of participation within graduate student voice, so I think if there's any staff members that know how to connect with them and bring them more involved with student life, that would be really helpful for us.
I just want to say, I really appreciate that you guys come here and that you talk to us, because like I work at the power plant and I can end up feeling really detached from the students, and it's the whole point of why we're here. But I also really appreciate your kind words, because sometimes staff, especially lately, with some of the verbal comments and things, tend to feel like we're the invisible workers in the room, and sometimes it feels like it's working your heart out and it's not noticed or appreciated. So thank you so much for saying that.
And I think I was really the unsung heroes who we interact with our faculty, but who, you know, who do we go to with questions about our courses or about our programs? It's always staff. So staff are absolutely essential to our learning.
And becoming better people, not just students, but learning about life and going through it. And we love you guys. We need you guys to function. And you guys see students that you don't necessarily see all the time. Not everyone comes into the work center of the ASGF office. The students that work for you might have a really valid voice that we don't necessarily hear all the time.
Thanks,
everyone.
Thank you. And Chris is here too. Chris Holland from Faculty Center. Would you like to?
Sure, yeah. I'm Chris Holland. I'm someone to you. The new president wants for faculty center. So and thank you for inviting me to do individually all the support station that you do. And some of the things that also more and more faculty that you like to do a little bit more. Some goals for faculty that in this time of change and time of uncertainty in what student versus what to be. So at least in terms of sentiment, what I'll be sure to do is to just enhance communication, particularly of the issues that have affecting the wider campus area, which includes staff council and also student governments as well. And then as far as the internal sentiment business, I'm just going to make sure that we're focused on our efforts on sort of the core university mission of education and research and and hopefully not get bogged down. So, some of the issues, there's some time to talk about spending a lot of time on. As far as what's been done through the last meeting, confirmed new senators and the four officers. So, that's about all I have to report as far as official Senate business goes, and how, unfortunately, or fortunately, most faculty are off contract during the summer. However, some of the things that we're watching with interest, some of them get to us and some look closer to the chancellor process. So we're going back to make sure of the chancellor. relatively rapid schedule that just didn't necessarily include any government input as it has in the past. And also, these are my own personal opinion. So we should continue to view that we might not have a chance for it even in the future. And of course, every chance that has to have a CEO like an executive sort of officer, that would probably, in my opinion, be the president. And it causes some anxiety with people, but I don't think that particular goal is necessarily a bad thing. It's somebody that helps establish UAS as the lead chance. It's all on the stuff correctly, and that's the way I believe it used to be catching up on the UA history. Yeah. As far as like the layoffs and the furlough process, I mean, the change in the regulation is concerning to many of us. It's, on one hand, it's not too much concern to faculty because of the union. Agreement pretty much forbids the layoffs and the real process affected a lot of faculty. However, about 47, almost 50% of faculty are either adjuncts or, like myself, are on term contracts with research assistant professors still on contracts. And we get a year, one of the little pieces of the newspaper that was buried, about 200 term contracts for about the new. Basically, so that is a pretty large effect. And one thing that hasn't been reported, you might not be aware of, or perhaps at the next particular department, is that senior faculty, some of our faculty that have been the most productive, and perhaps some of the staggers over the 200, have been along for around for 20 years, they are being encouraged through various. Methods to basically retire for the good of the department, so that two or three of the junior colleagues don't have to be laid off or encouraged to leave as well, and that does affect our ability to get things done. As well as also the Senate, the government's office that their budget is cut in half soon, some James J. Harvey's office is cut in, as you probably can imagine. The lion's share of the work was actually done by Jane Harvey in the Senate, and so that also opens up as well, which makes it more focused on that. Upcoming changes that we're looking at this over the summer, I think, pretty rapidly, and kind of buried in some of the meeting reports and changes to system governance. Probably affects faculty's better more as we continue to want the university system. We're not, nobody's really clear on what it means for us to go back to one university system. It's going to be one faculty senate across all of the campuses, or we're going to take three senates. So if we go to a single accreditation model, then typically what that means is that academic decisions are made by one of the departments, so there might only be, for example, one of the physics departments. Or the decisions are made in one location, perhaps in your hands, perhaps in your bridge, as a little bit of other. It's nice to have an idea of how this works at other universities, but how that works here. So, anyone's guess, any questions to Jim Johnson are basically not the answer. Yeah, I don't have the answer, I don't know. I don't think a lot of these issues have really been defined in detail yet. And so it's kind of difficult for these changes to occur during the summer with faculty around the contract, but we're listening, at least over email, and I'm here over the 12 months closely. So I welcome any comments, questions, concerns in person or by phone or by email, and I'm Gail Ryan, this number, your size and chat.
I have a question. When we have faculty students still locked up, the consolidation that the president is going in to try to accreditate, accreditation is a doc, and you try to accredit all through the university, all through the university, and accreditation is where there's so different between UAS and UAA, UAA's accreditation compared to UAS, given the difference between faculty, both of us in UAA and PhDs. Now, they've got other accreditations. Now, I'm going to try to accredit all through the university, under foreign accreditation, which one are they going to vote? The one that Camilla has, or the one that UAA has? How does that contend with
that? Good question, and I think most of the faculty were aware of it, but we really don't, I don't think there's a real consensus. I don't think anybody really knows what that means, but a lot of the faculty have been here. This has really been the only university they taught at, not familiar with how this works. I do have experience with one other university, I know Aeronautical University, which is not a state university, but it has two large campuses, one in Daytona Beach, Florida, one in Prescott, Arizona. And they have a large number of satellite campuses on military bases across the world that have to constitute levels, but they, under their process, basically all of the academic and curriculum decisions are made in their Daytona Beach office, and they have basically multimodality templates, which are syllabi, which basically define 80% of the course, roughly 80% of the course, and those are handed off to faculty at all the campuses, and it's like this. What you teach through certain exams and homeworks takes away a lot of faculty experience to make these course decisions. And on the one hand, it's nice because you don't have to do this work, those decisions are made for you, but on the other hand, it takes away a lot of the things that allow us to make our classes unique and to make this university stand out as opposed to UAA. So, largely, it's all for radar. We don't know what's how it's attached. And in some sense, I don't think. Even Dan White or Jim Johnson have a real clear idea. We're trying to make these changes in conjunction with the Northwest Accreditation Authority. As far as I know, we are the first case for them to consolidate multiple campuses and multiple universities rather than to a single university with multiple campuses. And so this is really a terrible kind of view that these are strategic pathways. And something that probably might be a good thing that should have been done 10 years ago, back when budgets were good, and trying to reorganize and build new universities when we have the funds to do that. And it seems like these two issues of reorganization, which might be a good thing, is being conflated with the budget issue as we just scramble to deal with the year of significant budget declines. Not opportunities, a lot of decisions being made with incomplete information.
Sorry, I can't find the years I had a question. So you mentioned some ambiguity about, you know, what sort of post governance is like for those families and what might original decisions be made. And I truly believe that no one knows. I don't think we're waiting for an answer from President Johnson. I think that haven't gone through that process, not a process yet, or haven't decided. So I think that there is an opportunity for an initiative that governance groups can kind of establish what we feel or recommend what we feel would be the ideal structure moving forward. So I'm sorry.
So that's a very good point, because things are so uncertain. I mean, we do have an opportunity to get out in front of the process and propose solutions ourselves, and in my opinion, is that the administration, I think that they would welcome that kind of input, because they want the university to see if they might not necessarily be in a way that we are necessarily comfortable with, but I think they are receptive to solutions, so that the more that we can do in our respective organizations to propose solutions for way things that we think could work better, I think we have a lot of influence in that process. So it's just the question is how do we be heard and show we have to meet. And sending emails, and there's always sent emails directly to the president, you know, get rid of it, but necessarily, but it's generally aware of these sorts of issues. That's a very interesting
point. Chris, you had a question online from Chad Olson. I think maybe as a research professor, you might also, there's a little bit of concern just that they might not be able to hear you perfectly. So, anyway, the mic's over.
I'm not aware of any grant that people do.
joke, it's really more major academic difficulty lost. That how the grants would work, because the grants was usually, even though we might have a health PR, it's made to assist the courses. And I'm sure there's ways around that, so that I know faculty can take their grants in those universities or in some other locations. So there's ways that can happen, but I'm not aware of
system.
Yeah, like, well, our contract,
right?
And really, what's wrong? Contract is that. And so we watch from afar and sort of do it have arts or something.
Sure. Yeah, lots of uncertainty. Any other questions for Chris? I'm glad to move on. Anybody else online? Thanks very much for being here. Yeah, appreciate your time. Okay. And thanks again to the students.
Yes, you.
All right, guys. We'll move on. We'll actually jump back to officer reports. Obviously, Faye's not here. I don't have a lot to report. I would just observe that in going through the materials from last week's Board of Regents meeting, it's clear that a number of our folks, including Faye and myself, will be involved as representatives for staff at the system level in the summer to phase. Well, it used to be called Phase Zero reviews, but now it seems like that we're sort of fully into Phase One. So, as Chris mentioned, the three academic programs, in addition to the non-academic OIT, athletics, research administration, and procurement. Three of those, I think, have long been planned for summertime review, but the addition of procurement and the three academic programs, I think that those have actually been announced since our last staff council meeting. So those seven programs will at least begin full expedited review between now and the fall. I think it still seems somewhat uncertain exactly how long the academic program reviews will take. I think that there's some assumption on the part of faculty that that they will continue through the beginning of the academic year in the fall in order to bring some off-contract faculty back into that review process. And then I would just observe that and these have not been formally announced, but because they were in the President's report late last week, I think it's okay to talk about them. So our staff representative on the Research Administration Review Committee will be me, and then Faye will represent us on procurement.
Yeah. So I wants to know if there's anyone other than yourself and Faye that will be from staff council will be
yeah.
in the process.
So we're actually, Leslie, this is a formality, but Faye and I are being pulled from Staff Alliance. So there's actually no formal, and again, this could change because this hasn't been announced like as such by the president or by the system. So we're still awaiting those announcements formally. But the way that the president reflected it to the Board of Regents last week is that they were pulling participants from Staff Alliance at the system-wide level and not from the campus levels, because these are system-wide reviews. These are not like UAF-based reviews. So I don't know. It doesn't sound to me like there's a formal role in this process for any of the campus level governance groups. I think that, you know, personally, I'm somebody that's interested in being transparent and communicative both ways. So I guess I would encourage anybody who has particular thoughts, anxieties about these summertime reviews and is you know, on contract, which, you know, we can't say for, certainly not for all faculty and not even for all staff either, I would encourage people to contact, you know, us as Alliance participants. Because I'm, for one, I think I can speak for Faye, too, is that we want to engage as many of the people that we represent as possible. And that's like a system-wide thing. So, so that's about, you know, that's, there's plenty of other items that I have thoughts about, but in terms of subjects that are not covered elsewhere on our agenda, I think that that's where I would sort of put, that's where I've been putting it. So,
what is the research administration review covering?
It's a great question. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there are some bullet points.
So that would be pretty wide.
Yeah.
Or pretty narrow.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that there, obviously the consolidation of a lot of research activity, the proposed consolidation of research activity to UAF under strategic pathways will be, I think, a major topic of conversation. You know, I think that there will be a lot of examination of options for shared services. I think that both models that have been successful and those that have been proposed and what alternatives could look like to, you know, if there's duplication of functions, I think, across campuses, but also within, I think, campuses, those will be, I think, probably priorities of covering. But this, you know, I think that the form that the review process takes will affect the content of the review. And I think that those are still kind of decisions that are being made. Yeah. I have the same questions. Any other questions? I would encourage folks, I didn't bring it with me, but I would encourage folks to review the materials that President Johnson presented to the board on Thursday. There's some information there that's new. And I think relevant to what's going to happen here and in Butcherbridge over the next 2 or 3 months. Okay. So we'll move on. Unless there's any other questions. Oh yeah. Leslie. So I can have Nicole just email the link to this. It's on the agenda. It's on the Board of Regents agenda page. If you're familiar with the Board of Regents site. Maybe you might be able to find it easily, but we can also email a link. There's just a slide deck that Jim Johnson presented that's got a lot of new stuff. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Yeah. No problem. Okay. We'll move into unfinished business. The mentoring interest survey. Jamie, I think, and yeah, Phil's here too. So I don't know if you guys have any updates in terms of the mentoring interest survey, but you know, it's been kind of fits and starts. But if you guys have anything you want to, any updates on the.
I don't have any. I've been through a research trying to be with the TED program, which is really just
sure thing. Okay. We'll keep our eyes on that. Item B, as Chris alluded to, you know, lots of changes and updates to the Chancellor search since our last meeting. This is another case of, you know, as a communications person, it's frustrating. I think I can say that the way that we voted in the form of Faye's participation on the hiring committee and in the form of a lot of our participation in the forums for the chancellor candidates, we devoted a lot of time and resources to that hiring process, and for the not only the decision to cancel that search at the last minute, but also to announce it on a Thursday at the end of the term, on staff development day, and then to bury their information in an email that was, you know, the subject line, you know, had just mentioned it briefly, that there was any information about the chancellor search in it at all. And then to have that be the announcement that the search is being canceled, that was just, really kind of discouraging, I think. At a time when, you know, I, for one, I think that probably a lot of us were looking forward to having new leadership, to having somebody that we could invest some of our energy and vision for what UAF or even the UA system would look like. It's clear at this point that, as Chris mentioned, it's clear that the vision that that Jim Johnson has for UAF is not to have a chancellor, and I think that I guess it, from that perspective, it's not like there's no rationale whatsoever for not hiring somebody, but I can't imagine that, personally, I can't imagine that the process of the process of seeking single accreditation was not something that came up in the discussions and interviews with these chancellor candidates. I think that it seems like the rationale behind canceling the search was that they didn't want to hire somebody into a position that could be eliminated in the near future. That I just don't. I mean, I think that these candidates were well aware of the process of the shifts and the changes that could happen to the university. So the notion that we're somehow protecting them from a position that's vulnerable, I think that there's just, I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense to me. But obviously the decision's been made to pursue an interim chancellor with a much different hiring process and a much quicker hiring process than a full chancellor search. That's sort of where we're at now. I think that what staff's role, what staff council's role will be in the hiring of that position is very unclear. It's not clear that we'll have a formal role at all. I guess it's our hope that we will, but because it's on a very short timeline and because they're seeking internal candidates only, it seems sort of uncertain. I mean, in the past, we have communicated formally with the president's office that we are seeking a role, which, you know, we could do something like that again. It's unclear to me what effect that could have. Any questions, Jane?
But I think one of the points are the certainty about being included is to submit comments and those that kind of set up representatives coming to you and set up representatives. The finalists are supposed to be selected by today. I just checked the website, it's not up yet, but supposed to be selected by today, and they're going to get a year for the open through June 20th. So, you know, if we're not approached for feedback formally, we could as a body only make an effort to provide feedback in bulk and, get them with through.
I think that that's a great suggestion. So maybe that's another link that we can sort of send around to our group, and maybe as representatives also communicate strongly to our constituents that staff feedback will be very important. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, I was thinking about the chancellor position. You know, I'm so attracted to President Johnson to eliminate that. I was thinking, maybe it's not just the chancellor position. Does anybody know how much support staff that office has besides the chancellor?
If
they're down pretty far.
Yeah. I don't know what the numbers started with.
There's Jeannie, but Jeannie's special projects. She took her last meeting. You've got Debbie Queen, who's the chair's assistant.
Yeah.
Chiquise. And that's, Corey is still, my understanding is Corey is still his executive officer. However, she's also taken on the vice chair for admin services. But that, I believe, is, unless I'm totally overlooking something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, are you going to count that diversity and equal opportunity fall directly under them?
Well, then you'd have to count us as governance, too.
Yeah.
So it depends.
I mean, that's not direct support staff, but they are directly under their office. So that adds some potential.
And there are quite a few
that
report to the chair.
Yes, and they're all going to be affected by this kind of decision, but how much are they going to be affected?
Mm-hmm.
Will they be gone? Will they be under some other...
I don't think that we can lose the diversity
office. Yeah, so they'd have to go to HR or something like that, so I don't know.
I think it's a great point. And I think that certainly making reference to, the way that the open questions about...
I don't see the word that's prepared and maybe looking at including them, saying, look at all this, I can say, including all this other stuff that really wouldn't disappear. But it looks good on paper, and so I don't know. It depends on how you're counting this before staff goes with that office.
I think it's a great point. Yeah, and so I think referencing that instability and that uncertainty in the comments that we can make and the feedback that we can make about the interim chancellor search, I think is important.
I think this would be another thing where a resolution would be appropriate. I don't think the timeline is quite tight. I think something has to be done in August or September. And it's not that the resolution would cause any change at all. It would just be that we would be telling them we're watching and we're concerned. So that, any time you're really putting anyone on notice, because it's going to have no enforcement. But I think it's still important to be able to tell leadership and administration that what you're doing is noticed. And I think this is something that's worthy of that. So you really do deserve an explanation for the long-term plan. Okay, you have an interim chancellor. What's the plan a year from now? What's the plan next year? You're not going to have single accreditation by then. You probably won't even have agreement by then. So you're going to need a plan.
I think that's true, Matthew, sir. Okay. I'm somebody that's guilty of... sort of frequently assuming that what is understood by me or sort of my sort of internal whatever is understood by the people I'm communicating to, even though I don't always voice it. And I think that that can be projected to an organization. So I think that it's very clear that we feel a certain way, and I think staff at large at UAF feels a certain way about this process and the way that it's playing out. But for us to assume that perspective is clear to leadership is probably not safe. So resolutions are sort of the way that we can communicate that. So I take Brett's point. I think I agree, Matthew.
So I have a couple things. I don't necessarily think what he's doing is a bad thing, just because of all the talk he's had about reducing further administration, talking about huge administrative burdens and things like that. I think that it's not necessarily bad, but as a department, we don't have a director right now because they're not going to hire one anytime soon. The voice of the kind of main role person actually allows them now because he doesn't have to go through the director or his filter up. So just kind of emphasizing to even like our feeling stuff, just because actually we don't have a chapter, it's almost like our voice is more valuable than our voice, kind of like being behind your head. So, and that's just on how emphasizing that to staff that if you're going to take speak up now, this is now the time to start listening more than we can catch. Just trying to get direction.
I think that, I think that makes
sense. When you look at our agenda, and we've got chancellor remarks on here. So we've got, at least with the chancellor, we have two-way communication. We have somebody from here. Give us communication from that level. If we lose that, you know, we already have a little vague about what's going on up there. We could ask the chancellor and get a pretty good answer for the things that we aren't directly involved in. The chancellor is on these meetings with the president and the regents.
So, you know, I think to Chris's point, that this the sort of formal change that we're talking about, it doesn't have to be a disaster. I mean, I think that having having our direct leader being the president of the university rather than a chancellor in between, that doesn't have to be. I mean, I can imagine a scenario where that could be at least as direct and as two-way as having the chancellor in the middle. The fact of the matter is we're not just talking about a formal change, we're talking about a personnel change, and it's also true that staff council has had a pretty good and friendly and inclusive relationship with the past couple of chancellors, including interim chancellor Powers, and I'm not sure that I'm an open-minded person. When I get into a room with Jim Johnson and we're speaking directly to each other, that's largely been a positive experience. You know, the evidence in terms of our perspectives as staff and as governance, the evidence that those perspectives are being acknowledged and acted on is less clear. You know, I'm still open to, I think, the decisions that he's making, and I think that we sort of have to be. I don't think that we want to pursue a contentious relationship by any means. But to have the prospect of another leader who we invested as much time and energy into interacting with and sort of making decisions about, to have that removed sort of suddenly and without a lot of notice, it's not great.
I think that's where that question of what is the long-term plan is important.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's certainly a suggestion that the president takes over the chancellor position at UAF is interesting, but you'd really surprised if the person who's working in government for your entire university can also be the executive for one of your main branches and all the branch campuses, and that you're going for an interim chancellor. I mean, of course, you could announce that there'll be an interim chancellor.
Good. I think some people anticipate.
Sort of, you know, I think it raises more questions. You know, what would happen in that case? What would happen to UAA's chancellor, to UA Southeast's chancellor? What happened to the campus directors? I mean, it's a really huge change to your command structure. That's where I think it's coming from. So you have to. It's not wrong for us to ask for these questions and get these answers because it has huge implications for the long term plan. You know, if it's going to be an interim chancellor that just one of our. One of our current teams or directors, then I said, well, what's the plan a year from then? You know, from a year out from there. You know, that planning needs to start now. It's not just going to be, okay, we have an interim, we can move on to something else.
Yeah, Tony.
Someone never knows what it's going to be, so I was really looking forward to the chance. And I feel kind of unprotected now, not knowing, because of all the time and energy and money spent, the budget cut. All the money is spent on all the interviews for new people. This is all of them. Looks like that was a big waste of money, and we're supposed to be saving money, and not a lot of money. And so, if you're an interim, you can't be biased. You know, and I just think that it makes me more nervous. So, if UAS can be really well recommended, this going forward, if there's going to be consolidation, if you have to press the campus,
And I'll just give it to Council other chancellors that have good history, you know, and then you don't.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the point, this is something that I've heard Susan Hendricks' point that I've heard her make a couple times. You know, it seems sort of clear that as a student, as a proponent of leadership theory, that Jim Johnson has their strategy behind the way that he's dealt with these kind of decisions, and it seems more and more like his strategy is one of disruption. And the more things get shaken up and the more our foundation feels unstable, the more likely we are to accept a new and more innovative idea for how to move forward. That's a valid strategy. I think that if you're willing to acknowledge the potential positives of that, in the sense that we're going to be more likely to pursue like real fundamental formative change rather than feel stable and static and resist real disruption and shifting. I think you also have to acknowledge that that means that we all feel more vulnerable, which is bad for morale. I think that, if people, that there's a vulnerability that comes from instability, and I think that that has a pretty wide-reaching and discrepant negative effect on the way that we work and the way that we feel about our institution. Leslie, that's a good point. I think that there's definitely a anxiety that a lot of people share, and you know, this is another thing that's not really new. I think that UAF has long felt a level of vulnerability compared to the other campuses, and I think that anxiety is manifested in a lot of different ways. And I think that this is another avenue for that. Yeah.
One thing that we've got that a lot of people don't understand is that you would have to still feel the old land grant. So I would first mention, folks don't know that. So, positive extension is part of the land grant status that we, that was also the extension to extend that research to the public, but UAF is the only one with that designation. So even if all of these campuses are now a single accreditation, federal government has still only done with the UAF. And that's the question I have for the court coming down the answer. They're very intimidated, but you do realize that this doesn't, you don't just get folded up into the big queue, because all of the campuses are concerned, we're just kind of a footnote on the big plan, it's like, oh yeah, and outreach will just reflect whatever the three campuses are. Well, our priorities don't have been designated by the individual campuses. Because again, this has to do with our oversight by USDA, not by the so it's just interesting when they say, you know, each campus, well, UAF might lose some of that in other areas.
But
when it comes to the
outreach culture, it's going to be a gap. Okay. I think we have to move on, but I think that Brad's right that pursuing a resolution just reflecting, I think, the concerns we've had about the way that the chancellor search has gone over the last few months and how it's going to go between now and August, I think is probably appropriate. So we'll work to that end. Have something on the agenda for our next meeting. Okay. We've got a few other things in unfinished business. Strategic pathways, we've been kind of talking about it without talking about it for the last 6 years. Obviously very related to just about everything else we've had to say. That same email that we've made reference to, I think here also. I guess we're talking about these reviews, these summertime reviews that are being undertaken in the short term. Some more details about that during the Board of Regents meeting, in addition to the email from President Johnson. I think maybe I just open it up to questions. Anybody have any outstanding questions about the concerns about the updates? I think it's safe to say it's now and now feels more like a plan than just an idea.
I think it's a little as if it's being done a bit piecemeal, and my concern would be that there's not enough of an overall plan. I mean, if each of these groups comes up with recommendations for their particular area, how are those relating to each other? Because they obviously affect each other in perhaps unanticipated ways. Thoughts related to the interim chancellor question, and is the overall structure of the university as one university, how do these individual little strategic pathways reviews feed into that, and is there an overall cohesiveness in mind here?
I think that there is. I think it's unclear what that is, but I think that there was a little bit of that structure in the slide deck that we saw from President Johnson at the end of last week. To me, the exact process, this hasn't been announced. It hasn't been broadcast, I think, to statewide staff or anybody else, but it does seem like there's an idea for how that review process is going to go and who those teams are going to be. But exactly how the results of those reviews are communicated and coordinated, that seems less clear. That's a good question. Any other thoughts? Okay. Chancellor Powers is here, so maybe we'll jump to his remarks. We'll give him a chance to speak to us, and then we can jump back in and finish up our unfinished business after that. And there's not one more thing. Sorry, we neglected to schedule a break. So after the chancellor's remarks, we'll take a break here for a second.
Okay. Thank you. Well, good morning. Could I get a sense on who's online?
I've got Chet Olson in Milne, Christina Thompson with OIT, Christopher Brooks in Juneau, Jamie York with the GI, Ruby Walls with
ASAP.
Thank you. Melissa Parks. And then services, Susie Fry with S-Core, and Wendy Root with S-Loss.
Okay, very good. Thank you. A few comments. First, I'll start with Title IX, and then touch on budget and single accreditation, strategic pathways, some other things that are happening right now. We lost Chief Mallard, who is an absolutely incredible treasure. As everybody knows, I remember Starvation College and all the students embracing him during a incredibly celebratory night. But anyway, how well accepted he was, and he of course really pushed the whole Green Dot issue. And this engagement, I think, is what's the stuff of shifting the culture. So anyway, it's going to be a huge loss, but I want to point that out. Steve Gex is stepping in behind him in an interim role. I did have the opportunity to travel with Steve to Castleview and El Bethel, and seems to be a great great addition will provide also a lot of support. But Keats has had an incredible personality. I think that was very helpful for the whole effort. The rural visits went, I thought, well, good community participation, obviously public safety, schools, community, some of the banking community actually came forward and tried to do it. So here are some resources that are available for local community planning. I have never seen that in the private sector come forward with something like this, but obviously an attempt to build community. So we'll reach out to those funding sources through the summer and over time as we're controlling them together. We also recently updated the overall plan. The original plan that was devised last October had, you know, 100-some steps to it, a lot of involvement, student engagement, that's been streamlined, tightened again. So this effort will continue, there's no doubt about it. And I think the essence of it in many ways is the awareness and engagement piece of Green Dot. Budget. So, Thursday and Friday, the Regents meeting approved a $909 million budget for FY17, $334 coming from state funding. That is a $16 million shortfall from previous year. The planning that we have been working on is at the $300 million level. And this was the rough case coming out of Representative Wilson's House Finance Committee. And so that's what we went forward with. There have been a $26 million give back. The president will use that for strategic initiatives at the statewide level. And for us, that means deferred maintenance, engineering building, debt service, recruitment and retention, community college, tuition relief, degree completion, via e-learning, ASAP, IP commercialization, teacher ed, rural areas, in particular Title IX, staffing programs. That's where it's earmarked. So, in other words, it's still very much up in the air, but that's where the UAF will look to receive some funds for those initiatives, and that's a strategic statewide efforts. Single accreditation is the process. Dana Thomas has been charged. He'll be back this summer working on the concept of moving the three separately accredited universities to one for administrative simplicity, streamline efforts. That will begin in about 2 weeks. I believe Dana's out now structuring his analysis, but the more intense interviews will begin in a couple weeks. He hopes to have something by mid-August, and their recommendation will be made to the Regents team for the September Regents meeting. Again, I think as the question or the discussion here occurred a few moments ago, stay engaged in this process. You know, watch the websites and when there's opportunities for testimony and input, absolutely make sure you're at the table. Relative to strategic pathways, the effort will be, pardon me, just am I repeating? Seven different areas, school management, school engineering, teacher ed, athletics, IT, research, admin, and procurement over the course of this summer. That is a tight time frame, and that analysis will occur this summer, and hopefully by mid-August, have some recommendations to the president, some further decisions to be presented the Regents, and I think that Regents came in September 2009. There are.
That
and the GMAs, I think that's an anchor chain. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. There are community members involved in that, as well as faculty and staff. Relative to one of the lightning rod issues, of course, would be athletics. There's a lot of discussion on both sides of the issue. Very much a identity issue for campuses. Great deal of community support. NCAA requires 10 sports. How that is structured relative to Anchorage and Fairbanks is the question that's at hand. So anyway, but then also, as you can imagine, the school of management, engineering, and teacher ed are three large, big enrollment programs that are critical to the operations and to the running of this university. The engineering building, by the way, was a key issue on the Regents' agenda as well. And I would like to compliment Regent John Davies, who was appeared to be being tabled on how to potentially debt finance this building. John pulled it back, set up some special ad hoc meetings for analysis and for the entire Board of Regents yet this summer, and to be prepared for September. So if you see John, certainly extend your appreciation. This was the number one priority for the Regents. Get some choppy water, and I think John got it back on course. So anyway, just so you're aware of that. Other issues, some great things happening. 6-year graduation rate for the first time for full-time baccalaureates who's in freshman, 29% in FY08, 44% in FY15. We expect FY16 to increase as well. We still don't have the numbers yet, but good to see those kinds of results. You probably heard the Steel Ridge competition at the University of Idaho. We ended up as a regional champion, ended up 6th in the nation. Great history, both largely at UAF, certainly at UAA, also, but just a long history of doing very, very well in that competition. Graduations this past month, that was a great time. A couple things stood out. The paramedic program continues to build its national reputation. Graduates passed at a rate of 90%, national average of 74%. UAF Wildlife Fire Crew established in 2015, only one of two of these programs in the nation. It's fantastic. A couple big awards. UAF researcher Stacey Rasmus received a $3 million National Institute of Health award focusing on reducing disparities near suicide, substance misuse in Ukrainian communities. And UAF scientist Andrea Fonte, $1.6 million National Institute of Health award for studying specific molecular processes related to vaccines. Again, on the national radar. Combined heat and power plant on track and on budget. Continued Title IX safety and green dot training. And those are some of the issues that are happening on campus. We reported on the four breaches.
Yeah, a question on this.
Okay. Since the legislature approved a higher budget, why are we still looking at such high-level position cuts? This is the level that we were looking at when we were looking at a much steeper cut. Also, there was mentioned there'd be a higher cut to upper levels, and now it seems that they're only taking a minimal shift. This pullback, the fact that we were looking at a very tight budget and then and then the conference committee settle on a higher number. That difference is being used for strategic purposes, and I ticked off a number of those. And that is what President Johnson wants to push. And as I mentioned, it's Title IX, it's recruitment, it's retention, et cetera. In an ideal world, would we like to have that at individual campuses? Absolutely. Is that his prerogative from a strategic direction? Absolutely. That's where he appears to be headed. We're going to hear more about this in the next couple of days. We'll report on that and we'll get back to you. So you'll see some information there probably in the next 48 hours. Also mentioned there would be a higher cut to upper levels. Now it seems only taking minimal hit. I certainly don't see that at all. I see a significant restructuring at the higher levels, and I think you're going to see something profound, is my hunch, is my sense. Good, bad, and different. I am interim. I've been in both positions. I know how this goes. There's good and bad in all of this. But I can tell you, I think you're going to see some significant higher administrative cuts. So that's all I know right now. But I do not believe this, from my perspective, is accurate. Questions?
So when we had Seth Campbell and Michael Kinnick met with President John Michael and Bill to talk about street recovery, he kind of voiced that we were just being used as a pawn, that the budget cuts wouldn't really be $300 million, and then he felt like it'd be somewhere more like just $25 million cut. So it's kind of interesting that he's just like the campuses were told to his family, and then when it came back, which he made it sound like when he was looking back, that the government did his control over going back to the campus. So it seems from our piece that he reassured us, like, oh yeah, I don't think it'll be this bad, but it just kind of seems odd that he would say that and then turn around and kind of take the money and then say, I don't know if they come back in ways that he wants, which just seems kind of a little weird for him.
He's got to move the university in unprecedented times. And looking at these initiatives of his, that's how he sees movement. You can give and take some good, some stay. We know that. I want to again encourage you to stay active. Watch the websites, express your opinions. You're on the front lines. You've got the knowledge of what's really happening. Testify at Board of Regents meetings. Stay engaged. But
earlier in the meeting, we didn't really say it, but I kind of felt like that all of the trust was kind of being a little bit challenged between the way he was communicating and his actions behind it, and it seemed kind of there's been a few things that he's done, so it just seems like another point of kind of challenging that trust in his company.
I know how difficult this is, and I say that coming from the hospital when we had to go through major changes, and they're trying to communicate and work with a large group of people, and again, press gets a hold of something or it's misinterpreted. All I can beseech, urge, champion, ask you to do is stay engaged and very, it's my personal opinion, respectfully and thoughtfully ask that question at the forum. You can say anything to anybody, that's how you say it, and it can be received well, and actually some of the students did a great job, UAS students at the Board of Regents, and putting out some pretty sobering comments in a very respectful way. I thought it was very well received. Anyway, it's not an answer for you, but
I still have trust in person, but I can just keep up.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you. There's another question.
I just had a quick question. I know that you're more focused here at UAS, but I was wondering if any of those big changes are happening down at UAA or UAS as well.
My sense is UAS is going through a great change right now. I think UAA may be less impacted because of the size of the campus and the numbers of students, and the fact that tuition can offset some of these changes. They're seeing changes, and I certainly feel it and hear it as I talk to Tom Pace. And I know that right now, for example, their athletics program, there is great concern down there. I can't speak to the academic side, incidentally. I would say UAF feels the greatest tension because of the age of our plant in the debt service. Then on top of it, you have the academic programs and all the things that build the university athletics, et cetera. At UAA, we have such new buildings, you're really more focused on what are the vibrant academic programs and athletics. UAS is just very small, and I think there's a certain vulnerability. This pathway, if you look at it, and it's evolving, it's changing, I think there's probably directions occurring. I can't speak to that, but if you look closely on where some programs should concentrate, and that will get spread to those that may not make the list. Trying to think, for example, one area where we're sharing is fisheries, and we have a joint program which is good for Juneau and Fairbanks, I believe. On the other hand, the school of management, there had that discussion at one point of one school. Well, I can tell you, again, coming from the hospital, what the school of management means to the business operations that have fairly large employers. Same thing with education. In my experience, you need that local connectivity in order to produce a vibrant program. Long-winded way of saying, I think the other campuses are, I think anybody's under stress.
You mentioned the athletics program at the different campuses for UAA and UAF. How, with the NCAA requiring the 10 sports, how does that factor into the single accreditation decision? Is that going to...
It could. I think it's too early to tell. But I think a single accreditation might allow you, this is truly outside the box, I don't know how people would do it, but some of the early discussion is, could you have three sports here in Fairbanks?
Okay. So there's a total of 10 altogether.
Right. Hockey is not that big of a deal in Anchorage as it is to Fairbanks. Fairbanks is a lifeblood community from a athletic perspective. In Anchorage, you've got the Aces, and you've got all this big high school effort. And it's just a different scene, whereas here, Nanooks are a big presence. So, anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to bring the athletics as well. The athletics department is not in my unit. I was unit that 10. But I'm hearing a lot of discussion about it in my unit, about athletics, even though it's not in our unit, from this all the staff. Because one, they didn't believe that we could change anything. And when I told them what the proposals were on the table, you know, they're all in disbelief. And I said, well, that's reality. I said, I'm going to paraphrase what you said. The community is very involved in that. Carlson Center, their bodies on it, and well, there's going to be negotiations about that as well. But I'm not even sure how big the staff component is that's connected to athletics here. That's a number I'd like to know because of course, we're representing staff, but I don't know what the number is. So if we were to lose these programs, how much staff are we talking about?
Yeah. So I don't know that either.
Yeah.
I should.
And I know that even the hockey is like the big thing that I've heard about so far. Mm-hmm. Among the staff that's been talking to me. I think some of our other, I don't know why people forget, but our rifle programs, just everywhere. And what I've it'd be a real shame to lose something like that. And especially when we have our alumni, Matt Evans, just a couple weeks ago, won the world championships instead of a world record. He's ready for the Olympics again, you know. I mean, this is, I don't know why I don't pump that up a little bit more. I mean, that's, we have national championships. That's the end of that. So when it comes to my mind, I don't know what the answer is. You know, we're about to embark on this analysis. Locally, a community member, Parker Bond, is very engaged with basketball program, which is not on the local committee. But when I think of that brotherhood, hockey, rivalry, cross-country skiing, and this world-class weather in the environment we have. And that snow comes early, then stays a long time. In the training that goes on at Columbus is pretty incredible. Then this year. But I do agree with you. There are other, they may not, you know, be huge programs with lots of followers.
Yeah, and we do have an exemption from NCAA for some things, like you can't have a football program, you know. So they dropped that requirement for us because, you know, we couldn't have a season,
right?
You know, play football.
So all excellent questions. Stay engaged, write letters, send emails, testify, be proactive.
Wait a minute, maybe one more question.
Yeah, sure.
What are some other concerns, especially after the event here a couple weeks ago?
The power plant,
you know, right now we're undermanned, understaffed.
Yeah.
I've been working 41 days straight, along with 18.5 hours. None of them, there's stuff to talk about, no compensation. I mean, I have salary, but this is that way all of them on the power plant, which is people are working nonstop overtime, and there's no uplift in any way in the future for hiring. And we're losing 2 or 3 people here very soon, and it's just,
So every Monday we review every position in this, again, unprecedented time. Every position. I don't know, whenever a request comes out of the public, I don't know anything about NG. I give them some support. So I can tell you that's what's happening on a Monday morning with that cabinet. I can also tell you, when you live in a sub-Arctic environment, the criticality of that plant, and what it means to this community and to the student body of Yama, wearing my hospital, how you're sweating bullets when you blow a rod or whatever. What are we gonna do? You have to protect that. I hear you on the stress and the poverty we're coming in every single area. But as far as approving positions and staying on top of it, that's where we've been anyway for the last 6 months. If that's any help during the best of time.
I'm going to pull that baby off with me. Yeah.
Okay.
No, we never had it.
They had just approved anyone when all this went down.
So again, we start. Do you start every meeting with the state's amendment or
We have agreed on minutes.
We've gone back and forth. Okay, I'm going to bring that up at our next COVID center on the board here, but I'm going to ask about that state job.
So I was right there when the explosion happened, and I was right next to the boiler. It was an eye-opening experience. You don't understand how critical what you walk around, what you work on every day is. Like, people don't know where your medical lights go out.
Yeah,
we're a lesson about a lot of these decisions we made and what the direction of our plan is.
So I will put that on next Monday's core agenda. I would ask that you float an email to Scott Bell and let it come from another area. And I can't promise anything. We've got the money. We'll arm us, but we'll see what we can do. But you just made a point. It's coming from two directions.
You're the safety department. Kim was for it. She's so busy taking care of other problems. We have our own problems and our own facilities.
And you know, we're covering their problems on top of our problems too.
Tell me what you want.
I'm in my office, they want to.
Oh, okay.
So,
But yeah, I mean, they don't have a safety object for the services right now, so we're covering the services safety object. The telephone definitely is,
okay.
Because I've investigated several accidents from their location. And if you have full-time safety officer there, I don't think a lot of things can happen,
okay.
In all honesty. There's some very preventable accidents, but there's just a whole bunch of stuff there, and you know.
Then there's going to be some more requests for information analysis, where the staff can spend over time and can reallocate how large the issue is about setting this building. This is what you've got to do. This is political advocacy. You cannot stand by idly. You've got to get engaged. You've got to be heard. And do it, just my opinion, do it thoughtfully and respectfully. Ranting and raving gets you nowhere. But thoughtfully proposing some ideas, that's when I listen.
Thanks, Chance Powers. And I would also just note, earlier in our meeting, we passed a resolution in recognition and appreciation of you. So thank you for your leadership and for your service.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate
it. You know, it is a weird time in persons like you. You retired from the hospital after 30 years, and that's an opportunity for you. It's just an actually just a tremendous experience. And it's students, and it's staff, and it's the faculty, and it's the cause, but I think this has been extremely rewarding year, so I appreciate all the support I have this year.
All right, so we'll take a break. We'll take, I don't know, try to get back 5 minutes still. We'll take like roughly an 8 to 10 minute break. Thanks. All right, thanks everybody. We'll go ahead and jump back in. Thanks to Leslie and Matthew and Dean and Kim. Those are all good questions and I think well put. Okay, we have a bunch of stuff still to get to. A lot of it's connected to what we've already been talking about, so I can probably move to it fairly quickly. Capital report that came last week. Hopefully everybody saw it and read it. I think that was pretty adequately summarized by Chancellor and along with some new updates since then, I think. So any other questions or comments about budget issues? Sounds like we'll get some more info the beginning of this week, today, tomorrow, something like that, regarding the give back and how that money will be used. I guess I would share the sort of frustration that, the fact that that's now considered extra money, I think, is sort of problematic. The $300 million budget was never anything official, and I think the people treating it like it was is kind of frustrating. The volunteer day proposal. Phil, would you like to lead the discussion on that?
Sure, yeah, we have to.
Okay.
So bring that to our goals is to try and find a way to do a grassroots effort to get or kickstart a volunteer day for staff to do out in the community. And if you already got a great idea system, start with something on campus that we can do more immediately because the planning and execution is really for staff advocacy to participate in. It's really a long-winded process. And so we started a revolution that's in a draft format. And if you're interested in helping us define that, our goal is to state what would the staff council be committed to in that revolution. So that staff council participates in getting departments or other staff to
to volunteer resources in that grassroots effort, getting some staff council participation to get the ball rolling. So I look forward to having some taken for us in September. I think that
okay.
And I'll try to send out an email for the summer before I fail to meet it's really totally developed.
Sure, yeah, if you guys had like a Google Doc or like put
over to Google Doc.
Okay. Yeah, and we could provide either feedback or you know, additions or anything like that. That'd be cool. Cool. Any questions about that?
You said something that on campus, or are you looking to, for like the volunteer opportunity on campus, or do you need like something off campus that we can volunteer for now
that we'll do? A long-term goal, and I think that long-term has been we haven't reached out to organizations in the community to set the groundwork yet. So it's already June. I haven't been able to do that. So to anticipate that we have something in place in April or May would be optimistic, but it's probably possible. And so yeah, looking forward to that way that in the fall we could have staff making a volunteer contribution, even if it's here on campus to go towards a community. So the initial idea was to have a broader food drive on campus for the food bank prior to the holidays. So that was one of the questions in it, was if we did it during the holidays, would the effort fall short of having them have additional goods in time for the holidays? And so we're looking at the end of October to see how could we help departments organize a broader UAS-wide food drive. So that sort of answers your question. It would involve very many staff working off campus. Right? That's where
we're so something where people can be volunteering to stay on campus, but it's not volunteering for UAS. It's an outside group.
We also have staff in the state, something like that in the spring, kind of similar to the college link.
In the draft resolution, we've got a lot of good comments about what our various departments already doing. And so, there's already a food pantry in the Wood Center. We're not that well aware of there's probably an awful lot of great efforts that are going on that just aren't well recognized. And so, that's one concern is when you have in the fall that don't want to diminish what other departments are already doing. Have good morale, some team building. And so our goal is really to help us reach out to the community with UAS staff. But there's recognizing that we've done that for a long time. There's something we can do in the short term that would at least give them a long goal.
Yeah, that makes sense. And Leslie also brought up online that there's a food drive that goes on in May, I think, every year, too, that's organized. So, I think it's tricky. I think distinguishing it as a new sort of initiative and a new effort is important in order to encourage participation and energy. But it's also true that, there are existing, I think, efforts that this could contribute to also. So finding, I think, that balance is a tricky, though important factor. So it's good. So I think that we can look for, over the summer, we can look for maybe that resolution and draft form so we can all kind of provide input and feedback. So that's great. Thank you. Statewide transformation, I would just observe here that there have been a few developments there on. The statewide transformation team has a website. It has been somewhat infrequently updated, although the updates that have come have been significant and worth sort of reading through. Since the last sort of major update, which outlined a process for things like OIT, and procurement, those have now been, I think, kind of conflated and wrapped into strategic pathways. So it's now not entirely clear there are differences, I think, between the results of the transformation team's review and what these reviews are going to be based on strategic pathways. But exactly how those differences manifest is not becoming any clearer, I think I would just say. So I think it's worth keeping an eye on the transformation team's website, but it seems like the more urgent and the process that's going to receive the most attention at this point moving forward is the strategic pathways. And it seems as though the President's office is attempting to achieve some of the recommendations from the transformation team's report through strategic pathways reviews. That's what I would say about that. Okay. We have a good and inspiring item on the agenda, at least one. Under 7A, we have a presentation. So we have an award. It's an annual award for the Outstanding Staff Council Achievements. And this year, we're presenting the Outstanding Staff Council Achievement Award to Trish Byers. Trish has done a lot of fantastic work this year, I think, as we're all aware. We're sort of consistently receiving updates about the good and important changes that the committee has made its way through a lot of begrudging work, but definitely necessary, and I think we're a better organization and body, not just for that committee's work, but in particular, Trish's personality and drive, and I think that she's helped us all to be better and more attentive participants on staff council. So thanks again, Trish, and congratulations. Okay, new business. We're not going to meet again until August, so there's a motion on the agenda to transfer the council's authority to its executive board for the interim period. So we have a motion and a second. Do we need to have a roll call vote or just show hands?
Show hands, and
okay. You can
just
push
online.
Okay. Let's see. This is attachment 272-4 on page. Page 8. Okay. So, just so we have it in front of us, and then we'll just take a vote by a show of hands. Any all in favor of the motion? Any opposed? Okay. Online looks like. Any opposed online? Okay. Seeing the opposition, motion passes. That's good. Thank you. All right. We have another resolution from SGC. This is the group representing all the governance groups at the statewide level, the system level. This is regarding, there's been a lot of energy over the last few months regarding off-site participation in the Board of Regents meetings. So giving testimony during the public comment period during Board of Regents is, I think as anybody who's witnessed those meetings is sort of painfully aware that the only people allowed to give testimony that everybody at the meeting here are people that attend the meeting. There have been options to email testimonies to the Board of Regents from anywhere beforehand, but it's not as though those email testimonies get read or anything at the meetings, and so they are, I think, unfortunately pushed to like second class status. So there's a resolution here. It's attachment 2. And this has been passed by SGC promoting off-site, via Google Hangout or whatever, testimony at the Board of Regents meeting. So this has been passed and submitted by SGC to the Board of Regents, and we haven't heard any response, but I guess we're hopeful that it will be considered and implemented. Probably not, hopefully, I guess, before the September meeting. I checked and That meeting is actually the 15th and 16th of September in San Diego. That's the next board meeting. So we'll cross our fingers for that. Employee giving initiative. I think, I'm not sure I have information on this one. If I remember correctly, this is something I think is encouraged from the Chancellor's office, and along with our participation as volunteer efforts, United Way campaigns, I think that there is, Chancellor Powers, I think, has encouraged us in the past to come up with a way to track and to record all the ways that employees give to the university and also to the community. This is a process that doesn't currently exist. I think that advocacy just last month was encouraged to start a program to figure out a way to report on the different ways that staff and university employees contribute. I think that that's hopefully going to be underway. I'm not sure there's been a lot of progress on it so far, but I think it's a good idea. It'll require a little bit of elbow grease, but I guess I'm interested and enthused about the way that that moves forward. Are there any questions about that? Okay. Same accreditation. We've talked about this a lot already. It's further down the road, I think, at this point than I anticipated last month or the month before. They're pursuing this with not just a lot of energy in terms of the accreditation itself, but there also, it seems like, a lot of the plans that we have moving forward under strategic pathways and so on are based on the assumption that this is going to go through, which, it hasn't yet. But the letter requesting a review of the accreditation process is attached here. That's from April. To my knowledge, we haven't received word back from the commission. The assumption is that they're undertaking that review currently. And of course, it will be a big deal whenever we get a response from them. My understanding is that this is not a short, even once the approval to move forward with that process is, it won't be a short timeline thing. This is something that's pretty involved. Obviously, anybody that's been involved with the UAF campus accreditation is aware that it requires participation from just about every single department and level of the university to move from three different accreditations to one, I think, will be, as Chris Brooks noted earlier, a pretty monumental task. I think that, as my colleagues alluded to, there's really no precedence for this, although a couple people observed at the president's meeting with governance last week that the state of Maine is pursuing a similar accreditation, the university system, and also Monique Music from Staff Alliance has observed that it's not exactly equivalent, but it's a similar process. Texas Tech underwent a similar process in the recent past, where they had multiple accreditations and then moved into one. There are significant differences, especially in terms of the geographic reach. I think that that's sort of the one distinguishing factor that separates University of Alaska, the state of Alaska, from any other place. So I think that there's valid concerns, and it's not a guarantee by any means that the commission is going to rubber stamp this. I think that there's a lot of outstanding, unique variables involved in Alaska and the University of Alaska seeking this. But I guess we'll wait and see. It seems like there's some assumptions that it'll be approved, but it won't be an easy process. Okay, any questions about that? All right. We'll move to committee reports. which is Brandy's nominating. Trish, we have an attachment. Anything you'd like to add to the?
No, I think it's all there.
Okay. All right. And Chris, it looks like Rural Affairs did not have a meeting. Meet this Wednesday. Next meeting after that will be in September. Okay. Thank you. And James and Mario, both here. Anything you guys want to, it looks like no meeting for you guys either. Okay. Thank you. And Phil or Jamie, anything you guys would like to add? All right. We have some written reports then from other committees. Any other concerns that any of the external committees want to bring up in the full meeting here?
Regarding compensation, I got pulled away during Regents, so I didn't get to hear their discussion and vote on the operating budget. But the 2.5% increase was in the operating budget. I'm assuming it wasn't stricken. I don't know if anyone did anyone listen to that part of the Board of Regents meeting. Assuming that they didn't, you know, just strike that out, that should be part of the budget. That does mean, you know, depending on your departments, I know our fiscal officer in our department saying that, you know, this is going to mean either more furlough or layoff or, you know, it's got a fiscal impact. I will say that, you know, furlough with a pay increase is better than, it's better than not getting a pay increase.
Mm-hmm.
But it's arguably not better than being laid off, so I hope that doesn't apply to too many people.
Mm-hmm.
And then for next, just sort of note, Staff Alliance moved a resolution, approved a resolution, asking that any future, any FY17 increase be applied as a step increase and a ZGRID increase, mm-hmm. So half of it in the step, half of ZGRID. I don't know if they got any response to that.
Yeah, that was, we approved that.
Yeah, oh, but you hadn't heard anything
from
the administration. And then compensation, the compensation working group, these are resolutions we sent to Staff Alliance. So they're in Staff Alliance's wheelhouse, but we suggested the same thing for FY18. That if there is any increase in FY18, it be done as total split, grid increase, and a step increase.
Excellent. Message says, JHCC motion to increase the out-of-network provider and increase from 150% to 200%.
Of Medicare.
Okay.
Has that been solved, or is that just a change?
Has that passed, Leslie, out of JHCC? But it hasn't been signed yet? Oh, yeah, okay.
All right. I believe that's mentioned in the open enrollment materials.
Okay. Great. All right. Excellent. Okay, thanks, Leslie. Thank you. All right. We don't have any other community reports. So with that, we will move into a roundtable discussion. I'm going to stop the recording.